Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another News and Focus podcast. It's Thursday, and Brian introduced our article.
Obama, nation heartbroken by police beheading. U.S. intelligence analysts have determined that the video showing the beheading of American photojournalist James Foley by Islamic State militants is real, officials said Wednesday. We have reached the judgment that this video is authentic. National Security Council spokeswoman Caitlin Hayden said, "The entire world is appalled and the nation heartbroken," said President Obama, speaking Wednesday from his vacation on Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. The White House declined to comment on reports that officials knew of specific threats to Foley's life before the beheading of the video was posted online Tuesday. Obama accused the Islamic State state of torture, rape, and murder, saying the militants speak for no religion and terrorize their neighbors. "Their victims are overwhelmingly Muslim," he said. "Their ideology is bankrupt."
All right, let's stop. I can't figure out why the president keeps on going overboard in his attempt to separate these guys from Islam.
Well, how can you say they're part of no religion when clearly they are a religion? They're not atheists.
Militants of what? I mean, he says their militants are speaking for no religion. They'll just, no, they're militants of Islam. Their holy book tells them.
If you ask them who they are going to clearly identify themselves as working for Allah.
Yeah, the overwhelming motivation is absolutely religious. I mean, it's just a ridiculous statement. You know, I'm not going to say that every Muslim is a terrorist, but to say that this isn't Islam-backed and Muslim-motivated is pretty ridiculous.
It seems as though the president is just going overboard in his effort to protect this Muslim situation.
Well, there's a secondary message here, too, and that is religion shouldn't affect your life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because he's able to separate the religion from the beliefs that come from that religion. And he wants to do the same thing on the Christianity side, too. You know, hey, Christians, you believe this, but let's just separate that.
Right, like you certainly couldn't have it affect how you vote or the way you conduct your life or anything like that.
Or how you run your business or anything, yeah. So there's this false idea that the ideas and beliefs that you hold are going to affect your behavior because there's a social mandate to do something differently. And that's just a ridiculous notion because we all know that what we believe is what drives us.
Well, the reason I wanted to look at this article was the fact that we have no idea the degree to which this is an actual threat for the existence of our nation. I mean, we sit over here completely oblivious to the reality that this is a legitimate threat.
And considering the Attorney General says 115 Americans have flown into Turkey and driven to Syria and northern Iraq to enlist, should tell us 115 Americans have done this, and that's the ones that they're willing to say have done this. But you know,
and those Americans, Bill, can fly right back into America without concern and can do whatever they want, and they can operate with complete freedom because they're American citizens.
Right. And more, he discounts the religion kind of twofold here, kind of underhandedly. He says the victims are overwhelmingly Muslim. So you talk about compartmentalizing. He's willing to say that some Muslims are doing the killing, but they're killing mostly Muslims. So, first of all, that's a lie. It's just a lie. But I've learned to expect very little else. It wasn't 500 Muslim Yazidis that were killed. So it is overwhelmingly Christian, and beyond that, overwhelmingly, if you want to go further, you can say overwhelmingly non-Muslim. And if you want to say that Muslims were killed, which is an accurate statement, you have to be willing to say, number one, they're not Sunni Muslims, they're Shia Muslims, which are already in a 5th percentile. You know, they're 5% of the world's Muslims are Shia, and those are the ones being victimized. So we're not necessarily dealing here with just Christians dying, but it is just non-Sunni Muslims. There's no Sunni Muslims that are dying in this violence other than those who are reported as assisting the West. So it's a lie all the way around. It is mostly Christians dying, and it is mostly Muslims, almost to an entirety of Muslims taking part in this genocide. But to say that it's just Muslim-on-Muslim violence, first of all, reduces the effect of what I think he's trying to do, which is keep the value of Islam up in front of America. You know, GW did this too, though. After 9/11, he wouldn't say it was Islam that did it. He kept saying Islam is a peace-loving religion. And that was a Republican doing that. So, you know, this is a lie that American people have been told for 15 years, is that, you know what, Islam is a peaceful religion. These are just some of the wackos out there doing it. Not if you read your Quran. You have to do this kind of thing if you're a faithful Muslim.
You can't help but to wonder, what is the future of America? It's awkward. It's difficult. I mean, I'm left with one or two conclusions. One, the president is utterly inept. Or two, there's an agenda. I mean, how else, where else do you go with that? What is the third alternative to what I just laid out? One, incompetent, inept, or two, there's something there. There's a plan. There's an agenda. There's a mission. There's something. In either one of those cases, we should be utterly concerned.
Yeah, we're in deep trouble either way. We don't matter.
I mean, you come off vacation, you make a statement, you go right back to vacation.
Yeah, he was on the golf course within 20 minutes of this statement.
Well, the third option might be that...
Are you saying that facetiously?
No, the statement was 2 minutes, and 20 minutes later, he was on the golf course.
He didn't come back Tuesday, back to the White House on Tuesday.
Yeah,
he's back now, but...
Yeah, this is in addition to he was on the golf course during the funeral of the major general that got killed in Afghanistan last week. Literally on the golf course during the funeral. I mean, what's he communicating with this and with that example?
I couldn't even get the vice president to show up for that.
Yeah. Somebody?
Yeah.
You know, he's only the highest ranking military member to be killed since Vietnam.
Right.
But the reality is his skin color means you must be a racist if you're critical of him.
Right. Even though he's only half black.
Right. But but you can't, you obviously are a racist because you're criticizing what he says.
Right.
You can't be, I mean, we said it. George Bush didn't get it right. George Bush was trying to do the exact same thing, which is nobody wants to pull their head out of the sand and recognize that this is a legitimate threat to the existence of our nation. We act as though that's an impossibility. That we're immune to an end. That we're guaranteed an eternal existence as a nation.
It's been 13 years since 9/11. Or will be September. And so I think we just have forgotten that can happen again.
And once again, it's confusing about, okay, what is the motivation? Because as I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, if the president would get up here and try to drum out the fact, I mean, if this was brought into the racial context here in America, this would not be acceptable. To say, well, it's just, you know, African-Americans killing African-Americans. No, that would be an outcry. You know, we would have our heads in the sand. What are you talking about? You don't think there's racism in America? Well, this is just religious and racism in another country, and for some reason we want to downplay that, but we want to really focus on the racism in our own country. And I try to figure out, I really do, I try to figure out liberals in their mind and the way that it works, and I haven't been able to do it yet. Except to say, the third option I was going to say a moment ago is possibly, you know, the God of this world is blind to their minds, and God has given them up to be blinded by the God of this world. And, I mean, it's not rational. The liberal mind is not rational. Because they'll hold one view on one hand and then just turn around and hold the totally opposite with no regard for the rational. And they want to tell me they believe in science and math and that's the future.
You have U.S. soldiers that are ramping up right now. They're saying goodbye to their families. They are packing their bags. We have soldiers on two multiple battlefields. We have an entire conflict starting all over again. And you're on the golf course. I mean, I just can't get over that. You're the commander in chief. Someone says, just let it go. But I can't seem to let it go. You know, it's the house is burning down, man. and you're over there walking the dog. The house is burning down. What are you doing? You know, there's a crisis. You're not going to think the right way when you're on the golf course. You don't think about the right thing. You're concentrating on your shot. You're asking, am I under par, over par? Should I be using a 9-iron? Listen to this statement that he makes. He says, we will continue to confront this hateful terrorism and replace it with a sense of hope. How? How's he doing that?
That's worked very
one
well.
Golf putt at a time.
That's worked very well over the years. You know, these are very rational people that we can negotiate with. They're filming cutting off people's heads, and we're going to negotiate with them. You know,
and replace with hope.
Yeah.
You know, and what mechanism? Why aren't we understanding that this is Nazi Germany all over again in the same kind of perspective? Why aren't we seeing that? Why are we so oblivious? We have to cut the head of the snake off.
Yeah.
And we're just utterly clueless as a nation. The entire world is appalled by the beheading. You know, I'm not sure the entire world is appalled by the beheading. I'm not sure that's the case. I'm not sure Afghanistan is. I'm not sure that China is. I'm not really sure that Pakistan is. I'm not sure that the entire world's appalled.
I'm not sure most of America is.
I would dare say most of America doesn't know what happened.
No. No way.
Yeah, I would say most of America is still clueless as to what happened. Yeah, that they don't know that this is happening over here, that there's a journalist that was beheaded by savages, tribal savages. I don't know how else to describe them. Anyone? Obama made no mention of the missing U.S. journalist Stephen Joel Sotsloff, who is shown alive in the Islamist State video titled A Message to America. In the video, a man wearing a black hood says Folly's beheading is a revenge killing for U.S. airstrikes in Iraq. Any attempt by you, Obama, to deny the Muslims their right to live in safety under the Islamic Caliphate? What's a caliphate?
It's a caliph is a deputy in the Muslim world. So, like the Sunni Muslims, they adhere to the first four caliphs below Muhammad. So, first four major deputies. So, caliphate is a deputymanship or seen as kind of a sub-rulership under Muhammad.
And the ultimate goal is a global Islam.
Right.
I mean, that's the of all Islam, is to have, you know, there is no live peaceably alongside the other religions. It is to convert everything to Islam. That's the end game of the Muslim worldview.
Yeah.
So he says, any attempt by you, Obama, to deny the Muslims the right to live in safety under the Islamic Caliphate will result in bloodshed of your people. The hooded man says in a British accent with Folly kneeling beside him. Folly 40 delivers what appears to be a scripted statement in which he asserts that U.S. airstrikes and Islamic State militants in Iraq signed my death warrant. So now it's our fault.
No, that's the way the terrorists go. You know, we're not doing this. We're just doing this because you are attacking us.
And then the thing is, they made the guy right before they chopped his head off. Yeah. Somehow they made him say it. Or there's lots of evidence that these guys, once they've been in the hands of these people for two, three, or four years, will eventually turn just to get some sort of compassion or mercy. So who knows why he said it? But Foley is the one who said it. Maybe he said it to try to save the life of the other guy.
He's certainly reading a script.
Yeah, it's very scripted.
After the beheading, the killer warns Obama that Sotloff's life depends on your next decision. Folly, a New Hampshire native, worked for several years as a video journalist in the Middle East. So he's a U.S. citizen?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So think where we're at now. Think about what this says. We have U.S. citizens being beheaded.
Yep.
And nothing's being done. I think it's fair to say nothing's being done.
Yeah, but we're gonna replace terrorism with hope. That's the answer to all of this.
Foley's parents held a press conference Wednesday saying that they had spoken briefly with Obama. The couple thanked supporters for their prayers and lauded their son's resolve. So many people were praying for him. I really think that gave him unusual courage, said Foley's mother, Diane Foley. Jim had a big heart that we shared with President Obama. We pray that Jim's death can bring our country together in a strong way with the values Jim held dear. Jim would never want us to hate or be bitter. Yeah, isn't that an interesting perspective? You know, we're not talking about hating or being bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not what this is. This is not a podcast about hating or being bitter. We're having a legitimate discussion as to how do you deal with people who are beheading your citizens. How do you deal with them? Do we really think that these are rational people that can be? Let's sit down at the negotiating table and figure out how we're going to coexist.
Yeah, and once you do that, which our current administration has already done, you've shown the weakness that you have when you negotiate with people like this. I mean, it's unbelievable to think that you could sit down at a table with somebody who wears a hood and beheads people for a living, and murders innocent people every single day, that we're going to sit down and whose end game is to eliminate you from. There's no treaty process. We're not looking for diplomacy here. You know, I want to wipe Israel off the map. I want to wipe the United States off the map, the great Satan and the little Satan, and establish a global Islam. What are we negotiating? There's no negotiating point to be had here.
No, in their mind, they're buying time for their kids or grandkids to do what they would do today if they could.
I mean, they make Hitler look rational. I mean, really. I mean, we could make comparisons to the Holocaust, but Hitler was a political entity. You know, these guys are a whole different ballgame.
And I want to just reiterate what I just said. They think multi-generationally. Mm-hmm. It's nothing for them to you know, pretend that there's a covenant on the table.
Yeah.
Muslim Brotherhood, you name it, ISIS, it's not hard for them to say 5 years peace, you know, ceasefire or whatever, because in their mind they're thinking 100-year plan. They always have. With the Westerners are the ones that think, 36-month plan to pay off a car. That's what they think.
Yeah.
The Easterners, they're not thinking that way at all.
Well, especially when you've got verses in the Quran that say, hey, if you got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Jihad's the most important thing. So if you're dealing with Christians and Jews, lie through your teeth, because it's all about jihad.
Yeah. And I can show you verses in the Quran that talk about how shaming people of the book is the right thing to do as well, whether it be raping or taking. Yeah. The idea is to shame the aggressor against Allah. So there's no, all you're doing is, if you get them to agree to anything, if they appear to be living by it, it's only until you die and your children are here. That's all there is to it.
And we know by their birth rates that they are having a global impact.
Yeah.
Bill, you did a podcast about names in Britain.
Yeah.
Muhammad being the number one name, right?
Yeah, by 1,000. So just in the last year, you know, 7,400 Muslim households in Britain had a son named Muhammad. That's pretty fantastic.
That's startling.
Yeah. Because it's a pretty well-known thing that you want at least one son named Muhammad. Well, you're not usually going to have two. That means there are 7,400 separate Muslim households that all had a son last year. And when you realize that the birth rate of Anglo-Europeans in France alone is less than 2.0, you're not even replacing the parents. Soon, it is a Muslim nation only by simple birth rate. That's all it is.
Right. There's nothing you're going to do to keep us from having children.
No, and I promise you, 50 years ago, the French leaders, German leaders, English leaders, they weren't saying Islam is a threat. They were saying these people need to be allowed to practice their religion. They're just peaceful. They're a peaceful religion. They don't cause trouble. They fight in our armies. They play in our sports teams. And before you know it, it's going to be a Muslim state, and it won't be an optional thing anymore. We won't be trying to just accept them and normalize them. Now it'll be required. That's the natural progression here. It's called silent jihad. Just virtue of birth rate alone, they take over the world. Because you have selfish Anglo-Europeans that want to wait until they're in their, you name it, post-careerism to have kids, and then they have maybe a couple. And that's the really fruitful families, if you have more than one child. So by virtue of selfish Westernism, they're going to be outdone on birth rate alone. Because you want to have a certain amount of money per kid. You just want to. Your career has to provide that, or you're not taking good care of your kids. That's the idea.
Steve, if you can remember back 2 decades ago, did you think we'd ever be having these kind of conversations?
No. No, not at all.
It's startling, isn't it?
Yes.
You were teaching U.S. history 2 decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. To think that we were going to have these kind of conversations, that we would be talking about this. I remember entering the Army in 1987, and that, so that's post-Vietnam, and we would talk about the lessons learned from Vietnam and mission creep and not going in with overwhelming force and not having clearly defined objectives and all the failures of Vietnam. And I thought to myself, as a young soldier being taught these failures, that we would never go down this road again, that we'd never have another Vietnam. And yet we've been in Afghanistan for 13 years, 12 years. And really, what have we accomplished? I understand from Andy Webb that last week, the final Christian church was bulldozed in Afghanistan, eliminating the final Christian church in Afghanistan. So we've had Christian soldiers give their lives in Afghanistan so that Christianity can be eradicated in Afghanistan. Think about the irony of that. Think about what we're talking about here. It's mind-boggling.
Same with Iraq. Every Christian I knew in 2003 is not in Iraq now. It went from a Christian population of 1.5 million to 400,000, and all we had to do was take down Saddam for that to happen.
Isn't that amazing? That's startling when you think about the administration from a, quote, Christian nation is helping eliminate Christianity in the globe. How does that happen? Who's the next president of the United States? Is there any hope that the next president of the United States is going to understand this stuff any better and do anything different? Because ISIS is not going away.
No. Not unless we make it go away. And it will take some Reagan-esque thinking about how to make it go away.
And this is that same ISIS that the president called the JV team to Al-Qaeda a few months ago.
Yeah, they don't seem very JV right now.
They seem like they're a good varsity team at this point.
Right. What is startling to me is two things. Number one, that many of the weapons that they're carrying were given to the Syrians to fight those freedom fighters, and now they're going to be used against us. The weapons, we provided them. The ammunition, we provided. The weapons, we provided. That's startling. And then the second thing is startling that the typical U.S. citizen is utterly clueless on is the idea that the leaders of ISIS were in our jails.
Yep. Guantanamo Bay, particularly.
Right. We had them. That they were in our hands. That we had the ability to retain them and in some effort to be what? Kind, gracious, loving, compassionate? What? We let them go.
And then we traded five of them for a very clearly Muslim defector that used to be in the U.S. Army.
Let them go. Five.
Yeah. In exchange for someone who didn't want to be a part of our system anyway. Very, very strange.
When you hear the president's rhetoric concerning we'll find them, we'll go after them, I immediately went in my mind to Benghazi. I went to Benghazi. I said, well, we got a U.S. ambassador that was killed in Benghazi. We still don't have a clue who did it. We haven't brought anyone to justice. So you tell me the world's appalled. You tell me that justice is going to happen. You tell me this. You tell me that. Those are just empty words. I haven't seen a thing that gives me any assurance that you're the least bit concerned about this.
Right.
Nothing.
Yeah, he's not going to take the necessary steps. That would be outside his political ability, outside his political agenda, the steps that are necessary. I saw there's a guy that I know pops up on Fox News sometimes. He's a retired lieutenant colonel, and he said the only way to finish this is to kill them all. You know, and when you kill them all, kill their goats too. Like you can't leave anything standing. That's the only way you're going to finish this. They're not going to stop.
No.
They're not going to negotiate. And if that's mean and angry and all, you know, you don't like hearing that. That's the only way ISIS stops is to bomb them to kingdom come.
Well, we found ourselves post European World War II in the Pacific Theater, David. And we found ourselves fighting these Japanese that just had this unbelievable ideology that we literally could not whoop.
They were not going to surrender.
Right. They were not going to surrender. I mean, we were not going to win it island by island, foxhole by foxhole. We were not willing. How many U.S. soldiers are going to have to die?
Yeah, an assault on the Japanese mainland would have been disastrous. I mean, you can't imagine how many casualties you would have lost.
Right. And so we had to resort to the most extreme measures in order to save lives. And it seems as though that a leader of that kind of caliber cannot get elected in the United States.
No.
I mean, is that too pessimistic or is that a reasonable assessment?
I think it's very reasonable. Because nobody's got the guts to do that. Nobody's got it, because even if it meant, you know, that they weren't going to get reelected, you know, if somebody wanted to do the right thing, that would be the thing to do. But that, nobody's going to do that because that hurts their agenda.
That ends their political...
Yeah.
When's the last time the president's visited Congress?
Right.
When's the last time he spoke to the House? When's the last time he spoke to the Senate? When's the last time he got them together and, you know, in a bicameral session and said, we need to be thinking about some stuff here. I need your support. Let's get it done. No, it's executive orders. Mm-hmm. It's legislating judges. It's that he nominates.
Sure.
It's a Congress. It's a people that's afraid to impeach a lousy leader.
The president is just as concerned about the global war on White House, the gases, the climate change.
Or whatever you want to call it nowadays.
Right, climate change. I mean, he's just as concerned about that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that gets as much attention and focus, climate change does, as this. Every bit of it. And you just say to yourself, who's the next president of the United States going to be?
Well, and he was just in Zimbabwe. He was at a deal in Zimbabwe, and he said, you know, if you guys don't fix these policies of being more accommodating
to gays,
to homosexuals, you know, you're not going to get our aid anymore.
Right.
Why are we even having this conversation?
That's our agenda?
Yeah, that's what the President of the United States needs to be doing.
That's right. So we're funding Air Force One trips overseas so that you can support the 3% of gays on a global sense.
Yeah, and imagine what that number is in Africa.
Right.
It's not even going to be 3%.
Right, a fraction of a percentage point. And he told him, we're gonna basically blackmail. We're gonna cut off that if you don't fix this. Secretary, I believe I'm gonna quote there. Look on the page with me, make sure I'm not wrong. Secretary of State John Kerry, is that who talks here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We grieve for James Foley. We mourn for his family and loved ones. Kerry made in a statement. We honor the courage and pray for the safety of all those who risk their lives to discover the truth where it is needed most. And make no mistake, we will continue to confront the Islamic State wherever it tries to spread its despicable hatred. What a joke.
Continue.
What a talking point.
When are you going to start?
Yeah, what a joke. Who really thinks we're confronting anything?
Yeah.
In Afghanistan, we're not confronting anything. Talk to the soldiers in Afghanistan. All we're doing is standing by to get out. The absolute minimum. Talk to the soldiers over there. We're holed up on FOBs, waiting until the end of the year to get out of there. So we're not confronting it anywhere.
And this is the same Secretary of State who has time and again in the last couple months emboldened Hamas in their bombing of Israel, you know, by putting the blame in Israel's lap. So, you know, it's to be expected.
But should we not see any linkage between Hamas and ISIS?
You know, should they have a lot in common.
Yeah, should we not see a connection point there? Should we not see that the Sadducees and the Pharisees can rally together and to get Christ killed? Yeah, there's some differences, but when it comes time to figure out who to hate, they can probably get in the same camp together.
Yeah,
it's scary. Our hearts go out to the family. Well, of course, our hearts go out to the family as well. What we want is an overwhelming response that says, you kill a U.S. citizen, and it's going to cost you $10,000, $15,000, $20,000? No. No, in this case, we give you five for one. We give you five. That's the ratios that we operate on. You give us one, and we'll give you five. Mm-hmm. I guess the youngest in the room is Brian. Mm-hmm. At what age, Brian?
25.
So, 50 more years of this for you, I'll be dead, gone. I can't imagine what America's going to look like 50 years from now.
I don't know if it'll be around.
Maybe that's ridiculously pessimistic, but I don't see anyone taking these threats as legitimate. I think we have this perception that we could kill Osama and then Al Qaeda goes away. And that's the end of it. I think we kind of had that idea. We just kill him, and it all goes away, and life goes back to normal.
Well, wasn't that the talking point for the last election? You know, Bin Laden's dead, and Al-Qaeda's on the run. That's proving not to exactly be the case.
And we won in Iraq.
Yeah.
That's over with.
And, I'm responsible for the troops going out. Oh, wait a second. That wasn't my plan. You know, it's just unbelievable.
And I think part of our callousness in America is 13 years.
That's a long time.
Sure. Yep, someone else died in Iraq today. Someone else died in Afghanistan. We've been hearing it. If you still watch the news at all, rather you might be watching TMZ instead, then you're just callous to it. You're not thinking about it. And, you know, like I said earlier, it's been 13 years since we've had an attack on our soil, so we've become complacent again, forgotten that it can happen. And so now we're just kind of forgetting about it, and then we won't forget about it, you know. Like the German Martin Niemöller said, the pastor said, they came for the socialists and I didn't stand up. They came for the communists and I didn't stand up. They came for the Jews and I didn't stand up. But when they came for me, there was no one left to stand up. And that's kind of the pace that we're on. Somebody's got to stand up. Or when they come for us, there won't be anybody left to stand.
Well, it speaks to our attention span, I think, you know, and our ability just to chase whatever's next, because really 13 years. You know, I dare say in 1954, people still remembered Pearl Harbor pretty well. Yeah, I would think that.
That's reasonable.
I think so. You know, but you know, here we are 13 years later, and, you know, I mean, we had something happen on our soil that has never really happened. I mean, Pearl Harbor's probably the closest thing. But Pearl Harbor was in Hawaii, that's not continental United States.
Right.
To dream of somebody assaulting us in the continental United States is amazing, and it's you know, one of the most amazing events of my lifetime. And here we are 13 years later, and we're negotiating with these guys that fly planes into buildings and cut people's heads off. And we get what we deserve. And that's just the sad fact.
I think another sad fact is there's, and I'm not crying for unity at all costs here, but we are so stinking divided on so many issues that I don't know that the president, he hates the Republicans. He's finished with them. He's not going to go sit down there and talk to those guys, and I don't think those guys are going to go sit over there and talk to him. They're so repulsed by each other. So we had guys like Henry Clay back in the 1800s, the great compromiser, Lincoln, who did whatever it took to get the job done, to get the slaves released, and to make sure the Civil War was ended. We just don't have that anymore. We don't have Reagan resolve to stand by the wall and tell Gorbachev to tear down the wall. We just, and we're so warm and fuzzy, touchy-feely, lovey-dovey, that we are repulsed when anyone has that sort of strength.
Well, we spent the last 7.5 years or 8 years, whatever we're at, 6.5 years of this administration apologizing for being Americans. Everywhere we went, we've flown everywhere and said, we're sorry. Please forgive us for being this. We're the worst thing on the planet. You know, on and on and on and on and on. To the point where is anyone who's proud to be an American? And I know we're all U.S. citizens, citizens of the kingdom first and foremost in here. But I'm just telling you from a very pragmatic perspective, we as a nation have our head in the sand.
Well, and that's the secular worldview, is we're going to be citizens of the world. I mean, you've heard the president use that numerous times. You know, and that part of that secularism is to knock down those borders and let's all, you know, be the same. You know, there's a lot of revelation in there as well. You know, about this trying to bring everybody into one idea. But the Muslims aren't into that. They're into a totally different idea of bringing everybody together. And so it's naive, it's incompetent, it's irresponsible. I mean, you name it. We just, like you said, he's either absolutely the most incompetent president in history, or he's got quite an agenda going on in there that he's trying to.
Yeah, you thought Christians were judgmental. Just
yeah.
You wait.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it was Stephen Dawkins who said that Obama is probably a closet atheist. So he's either a closet atheist or a closet Muslim. One of the two. I mean, there's really
a little bit of both. Closet homosexual too, perhaps.
Well, when you consider the fact that some of the most ardent liberals with regard to abortion, with regard to the gay rights, with regard to same-sex marriage, all that kind of stuff, are also the most passive when it comes to taking aggressive actions against this entity. Like you said, John, they haven't seen anything yet.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me because in their message to America with the beheading, he said, Mr. Obama, stop attacking us. Stop making it hard for Muslims to live in this place. And yet, if you really look at it, we didn't do that. We're not doing that. So what that tells me is the fact that there are people out there who don't believe in Allah really bothers them to the point that they're going to take a physical military offensive campaign to make sure they wipe out as many unbelievers as possible. You really don't have to do anything. You don't have to come over into their country. In fact, you remember, they came here first. You know, 9/11, we've been talking about that. You know, they came here, and yet our message in America is, you know, hey, we're separating the religion from the aggressive behavior and all this. We're being nice. And that's not enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understand, like we said at the beginning, they understand that belief does matter. What you believe translates into what you do.
And they believe it has eternal consequences.
Right. Exactly.
Eternal consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's almost fair to say they're more kingdom-minded than we are.
Absolutely.
Well, when death is not a fear, you know, and death is a positive. Death is something that's going to bring me more glory, especially if my death comes in the service of jihad. You know, that's going to change your whole mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Who's the next leader that can be elected that will actually run a campaign that says this is a legitimate threat that must be eliminated for the existence of the globe?
I hate to say it, but I almost wonder if it's not Rick Perry. I don't know. I mean, he seems like he's the only guy rough enough around the edges, maybe. It's not going to be Rand Paul. He's too libertarian. It's not going to be Ben Carson. He's a doctor. He's not going to be great on foreign policy. But you got a guy that says, we're sending troops down to our border, so you stop coming in. I don't care what you think about me or not. You know? Now he's been indicted. Did he turn himself in?
Yeah, I had mug shocks yesterday.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe he's the guy. I don't know. I guess that's the best. I think it's Jeb Bush. I don't know if it could be Ted Cruz.
It's not Mitt Romney.
No, it's not Mitt Romney. No, he couldn't even take it to the president in a debate, so...
I was more impressed with Prime Minister Cameron than I was with Obama.
Because
he canceled everything, came back, and said, we got a problem in our nation, and we need to fix it.
Or if you listen to Netanyahu, or you listen to the Israeli ambassador, those guys get it. They understand. That's, you know, say what you want about all that, but the guys in Israel know that they have a threat outside of their borders.
Yeah.
And if they don't defend themselves, then they will be eliminated.
They know exactly
what they're dealing with.
Right. And as a nation state, they've been dealing with it
from
the very beginning. So they have always understood what it is to be the minority.
And they're willing to be unpopular. They're willing that they don't need, you know, that's what he's basically saying. I don't need your permission.
Right. I'm not looking for consensus.
This is what we're going to do.
Right.
We're going to maintain our existence.
Is there anything else from this article that we need to talk about?
Well, Cameron called Foley's murder depraved.
How appropriate.
And I think that's right. Another thing Obama said in another interview or press conference, he says that no just God would allow this. And I thought that's interesting that all of a sudden God is just.
Well, look at what it says at the end here. UK's Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond.
Yeah.
In an interview with the BBC, Hammond acknowledged that the militant shown in the video with Foley spoke with a British accent, so it's possible that the perpetrator of the shocking killing could be British, which goes just back to what Bill was saying with the inundation. If you want to look at a preview, just look at what Western Europe's going through right now. You know, Western Europe, it started in the Netherlands. You know, Holland's always been known for their tolerance, and, you know, Holland was one of the first countries to allow mass immigration of Islam. It was one of the first nations to legalize gay marriage, legalize different drugs and things like that. And the society in Holland is just in shambles at this point. And that was, you know, 30 years ago. And it is just awful. And the Muslims have taken over that. The Muslims are making a big statement in France, a big statement in Great Britain. I mean, that's what's coming. You know, you leave your doors open, you know, leave your doors unlocked at night. When you know thieves are running through the neighborhood, what do you expect when you get up in the morning? They have ransacked the house.
There's another closing paragraph.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, the Islamic State is clearly sending a message to the U.S. government with this act, but it's also sending a message to the American people, said Raffaello Pantucci, a researcher at Royal United Services Institute in London, a security think tank. The American people will look at this and think, what is Obama doing in Iraq?
I don't think the American people think that. I think he's wrong.
No, we got 40 FBI agents in Missouri.
Yep.
No. No, we're not thinking, what does Obama do in Iraq?
No.
We're thinking about entitlements. We're thinking about this little... We are misappropriating resources in every way. And,
yeah, that's an understatement. That is an understatement. You know, I think your podcast, David, on a Christian's response to what's going on in Ferguson was excellent and most appropriate. The question becomes, why is the value of one black gentleman in Ferguson, Missouri, right,
mm-hmm.
more valuable than the hundreds that are getting killed in a weekend in Chicago? You know, a month. Why isn't the president sending the
attorney general
to Chicago to put? I mean, they're both black young men. All lives are lives.
But
yet this gets this national attention beyond measure.
Yeah, I read an article yesterday, and I don't remember who wrote it, but it was a female, and she did a really good job on it, and she talked about the statistics of black Americans being murdered in this country, and less than 5% are killed by a white man. And yet, so just over the weekend, I think there were 82 black men shot in Chicago, and 14 or 15 of them died. And so
over the
weekend,
right.
82 people shot over the weekend, 14 of them fatally. And yet all we hear about it, well, you know, it's just not safe to walk down the street because I don't know if some renegade white cop's going to come up and shoot him. That's so the exception to the rule. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying, I don't know what happened. I don't know if that cop did everything right. I don't know if that cop is racist. That really has nothing to do with the idea here that you have a major problem over here.
Right.
That you're not addressing, that you're ignoring, that it's all, this is what happens every time. Every time a person of this race is killed, it's a racism thing. And it may be racist in this situation or that situation, but you're ignoring the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
which is that 95% of the people that are being killed at an amazingly high rate are being killed within the same race.
More blacks murder and rape whites than whites murder and rape blacks.
So again, we have to ask ourselves, you know, Mr. President, what are you doing on the golf course?
There's a few things that he could be doing, I'd imagine.
Right, these are your people.
Yeah.
Right, you're the first black president. That's your legacy. You're the first black president. And the question becomes, having the bully pulpit of the nation, what did you do to reduce the black-on-black violence in your nation? What did you do to reduce the black murder rate? What did you do to reduce the black abortion rate? What did you do to do have? What did you do, Mr. President? I worked on my golf game.
Even the unemployment rate. You know, we're going to talk about that, and he's done nothing with that.
The unemployment rate, or the graduation rate, or the high school completion rate. You can go on and on. The statistical analysis, there hasn't been a single method of measuring improvement that has improved under this administration. So you have to say, are you utterly inept, that is to say, community organizer-in-chief, or is there an agenda to alter the power base, to reduce the mega power of America and shift it somewhere else? Because if you were concerned about the nation, why don't you start with your own ethnicity and have a global impact with your own ethnicity starting in America?
And we got to slide those negative gains over to all the amount of effort that's been put on climate change and the LGBT movement. I mean, that's just about every other word out of a reporter's mouth over the past 4 or 5 years has been one of those two topics. And there's just, like you said, and it just, once again, and I go back to the liberal mindset, I don't understand it. They don't attack the problems, the root issues. They don't believe that there's evil or sin in the world. They won't even go there.
Well,
you can't fix anything if you don't. You know, if I go out in my car, well, it looks like I need a new water pump. Well, I think I'll put a new tire on. That's ludicrous.
Yeah, the ignorance of a sin nature is, I think, that's our greatest downfall.
Yeah.
In the sense, I mean, that's really why the Constitution is there, because You know, nobody want that. They were afraid of those laws that we had in England that were oppressive, and you needed the rights and everything. But they knew you couldn't have no laws, because they were smart enough to know that men were sinful, and they would, given the chance, they would do the wrong thing. And so when we assume that everybody is going to do the right thing, and that people aren't inherently sinful, big problems happen off of that. I mean, you can trace
the evidence
so much
is overwhelming back right now in the world, and I just can't. You know, there's two people I don't understand. Someone who just, like, thinks, well, all we need to do is remove more laws and things will get better. You know, that person I don't understand at all. And then the second person is someone who's just think that it's going to get better and better and better until Jesus comes. I just don't. I really struggle with that. Where do you get that?
Either one of them are very difficult ideologies, and he's going to replace it with hope. Yeah. Hope is the means whereby we're going to fix this problem. The reality is he has no foreign policy. That's the reality.
That's a joke.
No foreign policy whatsoever. You know, we need a Roosevelt. You know, we need a big stick.
Yeah.
That's what we need. We need a big stick. And we need to say to all of the rest of the world, we don't care whether you're on our side or not. We don't need you. We do not need you.
That's the quickest way to cancel our debt, by the way.
Yeah.
Just basically tell them to take a fly and leave. We owe you nothing.
We're going to go fly on our own. We're going solo on this thing. And if you don't like it,
yeah, I think Roosevelt's a good example, you know. And Roosevelt's big thing was increasing the size of the Navy there in the early 20th century. And when he got all his battleships and his destroyers, you know what he did? He took a tour around the world, and he pulled into all the ports and just sat there. Said, "Just so you guys know,
this is what we got.
This is what we're packing. All right, see you later. next port. And guess what? Nobody messed with us."
And he painted them white, so you saw them.
You know, that's big stick diplomacy. You know, you want to try something? This is what we got. You know, and Reagan was the last one that had any modicum of even willingness to go down that road.
Yeah, we're done. Well, that's how we close it out. We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast. It's giving you a little history. It's giving you a little perspective. I know that if you listen, you're probably one of the informed voters, which probably takes you down to, what, 1%? Half a percent? You know,
it means the homos outnumber you.
Well, I mean, that's shocking, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I talked to my students today. I have 33 or 31 in there, whatever. Very few knew what was going on here. Very few knew that this was happening. You know, their representation of the typical 19-year-old, 20-year-old, whatever, that's utterly clueless as to what's going on in the world. It doesn't affect us. Only until the Twin Towers come down do we get concerned about it.
And then only for a little while.
And then only a little while. Yeah. Thanks for listening.